Not a cousin, Pashas. Oh yeah, you're right. Start your day today in Manchester.
Okay, they tell the story about this couple walking along. They're out for a walk, and they chanced upon a wishing well. They came to this wishing well, and first the woman came along. She opened her purse, she took out a penny, put it in the well. She silently made her wish. Then it was the husband's turn. He took out a penny out of his wallet. He put it in the wishing well. But as he put it in the wishing well, he got caught, he slipped, he tripped and he fell in the well. The woman was amazed. She said, "Wow, this wishing well works with immediate effects." Many times we daven, we expect immediate effects. We want our tefillahs to be answered immediately. It doesn't always work that way. But when I was thinking what to speak about, seeing as it's Mar Cheshvan, what people call the boring month, Mar Cheshvan, it's not really Cheshvan, it's Mar Cheshvan, and the play on words for the Mar is the bitter, the boring. It seems to have no yont of activity, nothing happening. The Bokram and Yeshiva have a full month of learning. The men in Shul have a full month of Tachanun. Well, it depends where you daven. But in some places, a full month of Tachanun, there's no Yom Tovim, there's not even a Tanis. It's just a straight month of Mar Cheshvan. Seeing as it's seemingly there's a better word than boring. I don't want to say boring. There's very little to talk about. But I was thinking something we do every day, three times a day. We daven to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, we daven tefillah Shachris Mincha Maariv, three tefillahs a day, 100 brachas a day, many other tefillahs we say as we go through our day. Many times we talk to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, we say a tefillah. Now there's much to speak about when it comes to tefillah. It's one of the things that constantly needs a reminder of chizuk, because it's something you do so often, eventually it becomes more just mitzvah noshem lebuta, something you just do without too much thought. And therefore something that constantly needs chizuk. We said in Elul, really in Tishri, sorry, in the end of Elul, beginning of Tishri, in Slichas, we say in Slichas, Gedalim, Bechroshim, Tafagnu de Losecha. We're like poor people knocking on your door. That's how we come to Rebbeinu Shel Olam. We come begging, saying we're poor, we don't have anything. That's how we come. Now some learning means chusim, we are very limited chusim. But some say it means literal, we're poor people. Now someone who's a wealthy person may struggle, he comes along, he says, "I'm a poor man, Kedalim Kharoshim." Now you know you have a house, you have a car, maybe two houses, maybe two cars. You know you're not a poor man. You've got whatever you need. Why do you say Kedalim Kharoshim? Now the answer is obviously very simple. I'd like to begin with this message that when you daven to Rebbeinu Shel Olam, you have to realize, seeing as everything comes from him, there's nothing really guaranteed. It's like a boss comes to a worker and says to him, "You know, you're not doing very well." He says, "Look, I have a good job, I'm fine." The boss says, "Shkoyach, the job is from me. I gave you this job. At any moment I can terminate it. You come to me like that, with that confidence, thinking that the job is yours, the job is mine. I gave you the job." We come to Rebbeinu Shel Olam, Chetalim Kharoshim. "I have in my bank plenty of money. It's all from the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. We gave you the money. And at any moment anything can change, anything can happen." Because we've seen recently how things can change so quickly without any notice ahead of time. Anything can happen. Therefore, we're not guaranteed anything. So ultimately, when we come to Rebbeinu Shel Olam, we daven, we are Chetalim Kharoshim, because everything hangs in the balance and everything depends on the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. If he changes his mind, things change. Our Zchusim deplete. Or the Rebbeinu Shel Olam decides that things should have a change of events. Nothing is guaranteed. That's why we come knocking to Rebbein Shalom, with knowing that, having the understanding that nothing is guaranteed. But when we daven, Chazal tell us, Rachmona Liba boy, the Rebbein Shalom wants our heart, he wants us, who we really are. He wants the person himself to come across and daven. Rebbein Miller points out, he says, some people come to shul, obviously no one here, but some people come to shul, almost like a robot. They walk inside, they do the movements, pull up your sleeve, tefillin, talas, shema esra, tachlonu, moedim, three steps back, wind up your equipment, off you go home. He says, mama's like a robot. He says, chaval, stay in bed and send the robot. Why are we doing this? It's got to be that it comes with our full heart when we daven, it's something real, something from inside us. We talk to the Rebbein Shalom, it's not just going through the movements every day. Rather, it should be a real tefillah, which is very difficult to focus every time we daven properly, as if we're not a robot. And mama's talking to the Rebbein Shalom. Rav Yigdal points out as well, interesting thought. Yaakov Avinu married four wives. His main two wives we know, Rachel and Leah. Now, we say Rachel and Leah because Rachel was who he really wanted to marry, but ultimately he married Leah first. And not only that, we know Leah lived longer. Rachel was buried, Kiryas Avros, on the way to Ephros, whereas Leah lived much longer till he got to Eretz Yisrael. Leah had Arichas Yomim more than Rachel, even though she was older, she lived longer. She was zoicha to be buried with Yaakov Avinu in the Moras of Machpelah. She was zoicha to more children than Rachel. She had six children, Rachel had two. She was zoicha to more children. Not only that, but she was zoicha to all the main children. All the Kenakas were her kids. Reuven was the Bechor. Shimon, Chazal tell us, was the Melamdi Tinoikas, teach the kids. Leah was Kohuna. Yehuda was kingship, Malchus. Yisachar Zavulun was Torah Gedula. She seemed to have everything. Leah. Whereas Rachel, she had Yosef, Binyamin, two children. Binyamin we don't hear much about. Yosef was the king, that's true. But the real king is Yehuda. So it seems interesting how Leah, which was meant to be the backup plan, she was meant to be she was plan B, she seemed to be Zoichata much more. She lived longer. She had six children, the main children. She was buried with Yaakov. And he points out the simple reason why. The Pasuk tells us why. The Pasuk tells us, before we introduce to the whole story of Mang, Rachel, and Leah, the Torah tells us one fact about Leah. Leah was someone who had red eyes. She used to cry a lot. Why did she cry? She tells us she thought she would marry Esau. She thought she'd marry Esau. She didn't want to marry Esau. Because she didn't want to marry Esau, she was crying. Now, when the Mohis, the Sadeikas cried, it doesn't mean she just cried over spilt milk. Rather, she was crying to fill us to the Rebbein Shalom. She was davening, constantly davening. It seemed to be a situation where nothing can come to save it. It seemed to be a situation which was Achas Tosi Lahom, that she's going to have to marry Esav, and Rachel, her younger sister, marry Yaakov. Yet the Rebbein Shalom orchestrated things in a way that she ended up on top. She ended up marrying Yaakov. She ended up living longer, buried with Yaakov, most of the children of Yaakov. How did all this come to be? Because she was the one who thought everything was about to fail, and she dove to the Rebbein Shalom and asked the Rebbein Shalom to please save her. And all the tefillahs got answered. Imagine her tefillahs. What were her tefillahs? Please let me marry Yaakov. She was zeichet to that. Let me live with him a long life. She lived longer than Rachel. Let me be with him forever. Even though Moras Machpelah, after death, she's still with Yaakov. Let me have the Shavatim. She had most of the Shavatim. She had six of the Shavatim. She had the main Shavatim. All the Tefillahs got answered. Why did the Tefillahs get answered? Because she was in a situation where she thought everything was about to fail. It all gone wrong. There was no chance of survival. When a person reaches that recognition of who the Rebbein Shalom is, and even when everything seems, all the odds are stacked against him, yet he perseveres and davens, that is a real true tefillah. And that is why Leah was zeichet so much, because she came to a position where she realized there's no hope for her. And the only one who can save is the Rebbein Shalom. Once a person realizes that, then you start crawling in the direction of real tefillah. Tefillah is when a person realizes there's nothing else, there's no one else. When a person's stuck, and life seems to challenge him, it's not the challenge the Rebbein Shalom wants. Rather, you should think it's a hopeless situation. And you should realize all you thought you can do with your help from friends, from family, financial backing, your social standing, you realize all that pales insignificant, it's nothing. Whereas the Rebbein Shalom is the real one, and he's the only one that can help you. And when everything seems like it's going wrong, you come to this realization, there's no hope besides from Hashem, then you reach the level of true tefillah. David HaMelech says, Shirah Malois, Esoeina Elohorim, I turn to the mountains, Me'ayin Yov Ezri. So we translate, Me'ayin Yov Ezri means, where will my help come from? But me'ayin has another meaning. Me'ayin, like yesh me'ayin. Ayin can mean nothing. Zero, efes, nothing. Me'ayin yovei ezri. My help comes from nowhere. Once a person realizes that, the ma'ayin of a hezri, there's nothing that can do, nothing that can help, no one and nothing, then you come to Ezri Meir Hashem. Then you can down to the Rebbeinu Shem properly and realize it all comes from him. Even when you're safe and secure, you still have everything. You come to that realization. Chadalim v'charoshim. I may be a wealthy person, I may have everything, I may have children, I may have a house, I may have a car, I may have whatever I've got. But you realize all that comes from Rebbeinu Shem, and all of it is ma'ayin of a hezri. It comes from nowhere. Comes from nothing. Ezri Meir Hashem, that's the true tefillah, that's real tefillah, that's when you click in to the connection with Rebbeinu Shalom, and that is true tefillah. Many times people daven, and they daven, they daven Slachlanu, they daven Rafeinu, they daven Baruch Aleinu, and it just seems to be something they're doing like a robot a little bit. But really a person has to come to the realization they're all concerned with Rebbeinu Shalom, and that is true tefillah. True tefillah is when you realize you're talking to the only one who could do anything. He's the full power, and he has everything. He's the only one that can pull any string. When a person does that, he's really reaching true tefillah. Huzav Shemana Esra, many praises, Okeil, Hagodoy, Lagiboy, Vahanoira. Many times we praise Hashem. And this is also for the same reason. People think the Rebbeinu Shem needs it. His ego is not on a healthy level, so he wants a bit of praise from you. The Rebbeinu Shem doesn't need anything. He doesn't need you, he doesn't need your praise. It's for us to realize, before we start asking, we have to first come to the Me'ayin Yovei Ezri and realize it comes from nowhere and everything is Rebbeinu Shalom. We start off telling ourselves he could do everything, B'chai Meisim, every koyach in the world is with the Rebbeinu Shalom. Once you do that, then you can go ahead and ask whoever you need. But it's begun with a realization that there's nothing else and it all comes to Rebbeinu Shalom. There's a story I heard from Shalom Molcha Rabashkin about his release from jail. He said that we know it happened on Hanukkah. And he said shortly before his release, he was sitting in jail, and he received a letter from the court, and the letter was his 8th appeal he had made. And how it works there, after 8 appeals, you don't have the right to appeal anymore, and the 8th appeal was turned down. And Abidara Khateva, that was it. 8th appeal was down, there was no chance of ever reappealing again. And it seemed the future was bleak, there was nothing left to do. And he said he was a bit sad. He realized, Abidar Khateva, that's it. But then he remembered a vot. There's a vot from the original. The original said, David Melech says in Tehillim, Yud Gimel, Lamzech Mizmur, David, it starts, Ad Ona Hashem Tishkachini Netzach. How will the Rebbeinu Shalom forget about me forever? Ad Ona Tastim Mimbech Penech Mimeni. How long will the Rebbeinu Shalom turn his face away from me? Ad Ona Oshis Eitis Benafshi. How long do I have to search for help within myself? And the original said, you're not meant to read it like that. We read it. How long will this be? The Rebbeinu Shem forsakes us. How long will it be? He turns away from us. How long will it be? I'll have to find my own aters in life. The original says, this mistake is not you read it. You read it. At Ono Hashem Tishchini Netzach. How long will Hashem forget about me? At Ono Taster Ponecha Mimeni. How long will it be? The Rebbeinu Shem turns away from me. But then it changes. The narrative changes, and now it's the Rebbeinu Shem talking. The Rebbeinu Shem says, you want to know how long? At Ono how long are you going to look within yourself, Aitzis? As long as you have the smug confidence and think it comes from within and think you're okay, the Rebbeinu Shem says, go ahead. Let's see how you manage. The minute you say, I can't anymore, Oshes Aitzis Benafshi. I can't search within myself for results. I can't search within myself for help. Then the Rebbeinu Shem says, fine, I'm willing to step in. It's like a child. You tell a child, you don't do it like that. You do it like this. The child says, I'll do it myself. So what do? You say, fine, go ahead, this is going to be fun to watch, let's see how you manage. And eventually the child comes to the realization that maybe he can't do it himself. And that's when he turns back to you and asks you for help. How to work with the shtadlus? This is a great question. When it comes to tefillah, as we're saying, we're down to the Rebbeinu Shalom, and all comes from Hashem. The answer is, shtadlus means you have to try and do something with whatever the Rebbeinu Shalom gives you, the tools he gives you. Actually, I remember when I was trying to get a mortgage for my house, the mortgage broker was telling me, he said his father used to always tell him a story as a child. His father used to tell him that there was a story with the Chazon Ish. I don't think the names are right, because it sounds a little bit interesting with the names. It could be the Panovich Rov. He said it was the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish was collecting for a koil in Bnei Brak, which was presumably koil Chazon Ish, which is again interesting. I'm not sure how it worked with collecting there. But he said that was the way the story goes. It's always a great story, even if the names are wrong. So he said he was trying to collect money. So he sent someone, I think he said, to Switzerland collecting. And the man came back empty-handed, no money. It was a complete failure. A few days later, he got a huge nadava from someone in London. And the Chazon Ish was very excited, and he made a small sort of nadava to thank the Rebbeinu Shlomo for his huge donation, which could help them get back on their tracks and re-stabilize the situation within the Kollel. At the Sun Zaydar, Chaznish spoke, and he thanked this person, this messenger who went all the way to Switzerland collecting money, and he said, "Why are you sure we had such funds?" And he thanked this person for all his work that went into raising this money. And afterwards, the person was really embarrassed for an asked you to thank me and to keep my honor, but really, you know and I know that it wasn't me. And Chaznish said to him, "You're making a big mistake. Every time in life, a person has a certain amount of shtadlus to do. Once you've done your shtadlus, means you have to try. The Rebbeinu says, it's not a free world. You've got to work, you've got to try, you've got to do what you can. Once you've done your shtadlus, the Yeshua comes. But it's independent of the shtadlus. The shtadlus says, you have a din shtadlus you have to do. The fact that Yeshua comes is completely unrelated. It's no shaykhus. So he did the shtadlus, he went all the way to Switzerland, he went collecting, he went around door to door, and he came back with nothing. But his shtadlus was complete. At that point, Yeshua came from somewhere else, completely left field, Yeshua came. Because once a person does the shtadlus, Yeshua came. Actually, I remember it was interesting. After my Sheva Brachas, I met someone, he said to me, "You've just heard 7 days of drashas. Tell me the best vote you heard." Now, obviously, I didn't remember a single one. But I remembered right at the end, the last drasha of the last Sheva Brachas, that stayed in my mind. I'm not sure why. And I told him this vote, and it's an amazing vote. It stayed with me many, many years. I hate to shame the gone, someone told me, "Aruch Neh," says it, and a few others say as well. It's coming up in a few weeks, so if you remember it, you'll have a good vote for Parashas Miketz. The end of Miketz, we have the story with Yosef and the Sarah Mashkim and Sarah Oifim. They have the dreams, and that's the classic example in Tanakh of Ishtadlus. We know that Yosef asked the Sarah Mashkim to remember him, and it says eventually he got back and he forgot him. And because he asked him to remember him, he got 2 more years in jail. The question is, why did he have two more years in jail? Is that not normal Ishtadlus to do? Sorry? One is Ishtadlus, there's different answers. Really, if you think about it, he was in jail. He had someone leaving. He had a man on the inside who was now going to go to Paroi, someone who could finally help him and get him out of jail. Why was he held responsible so much for trying to ask him? Was there anything wrong with the lack of bidochim? And the God answers, amazing, amazing pshat. He says, what was the mistake of Yosef? Yosef asked Sarah Mashkin to remember him. And then Yosef sat there waiting and anticipating for the day where they'll come and I'll say, "Sarah Mashkin told us about you and we want to now free you." The mistake of Yosef was thinking the Yeshua would come through the Ishtadlus. The Yeshua and the Ishtadlus completely independent. He had done his Ishtadlus. He had asked the Sarah Mashkim to try and arrange something for him. Now sit back and wait. As long as you're confident you've done your Ishtadlus, the Yeshua can come from somewhere else completely. There's no shaykh to the Ishtadlus. Many times people know with Shidduchim and Parnasa, you try something, and then the Yeshua comes from somewhere else entirely. Why? Because your Ishtadlus was done. You had filled and maximized your Ishtadlus. Now the Rebbeinu says the Yeshua can come. Punkt, you miscalculated and you thought your status was in A. Really, the Yeshua was from B. But it's independence, no shaykh, is completely irrelevant. You do A and you try as much as you can. The Yeshua comes from B, the Yeshua might come from A. The main sign is when a person does his status in A and the Yeshua comes from A, he'll still remember, it's much harder when it comes from B. He knows he was trying this, he was trudging up the wrong road, the Yeshua came from somewhere else. But when he tries, the Yeshua comes from that, he has to still realize, as you be Hashem. That's much harder, it's a much higher level. Chazal tell us of the Melech went to war and he fought his enemies. There were other kings who didn't go to war. They sat at home in Davin. The Yeshua came and the Gemara asked, what, they were greater than David? They say, no, David was much greater. They weren't so great. They had to Davin, the Yeshua came. David was so great, he went out to war, he fought, and he was still on the Madrega to have the realization the Yeshua came from Hashem. So his Ishtadlus can be channeled in the right direction of where the Yeshua came from. There were others who weren't so great, so they couldn't reach that level, they had to just stay home and Davin. The minute they would do Ishtadlus, they would fall into the false deception that they're the ones bringing the Yeshua. That's Ishtadlus. That is, you try and try, but you must remember the Ishtadlus and the Yeshua are no connection to each other, and they're completely independent. And if the Yeshua comes from the Ishtadlus, it's even harder to remember this, but that's the way to remember this. So that's Ishtadlus, you try whatever you can, but the Yeshua comes from Hashem, and the tefillah, when we dive into the Rebbeinu Shalom, is the realization that it comes from Hashem. It doesn't come from anywhere else, rather it comes only from Hashem. The Gemara in Brachas, Lamed Aleph, tells us the story of Elkanah and Hannah. Hannah waited 37 years for a child. She was married to Elkanah, who was married to Penina as well. She had 7 sons. And it was very, very difficult for Hannah. I think until the baby was born, actually, I think it was longer. Maybe I'm wrong. I think it was longer. But maybe it was 19 years. I'm not sure, but it was a long period of time where Hannah waited for a child. And at the end, the story we know, Shazaycha to her son, Shmuel, and the Gemara discusses different things that happened. And the Gemara points out, there was a time, the Pasuk we lay in, where Elkanah said to the Penina has seven sons, he said to him, I know like the worth of seven sons to you. Am I not as good as seven sons? Why are you complaining? Penina has seven sons, but you have me. Hannah was the primary wife. She was one of Elkanah felt much more connection to. And he said, because of that, you feel such a shaykhus to me. I'm like seven sons. And eventually, shortly after that, she went to the Beis HaMikdash, she davened, and the story progressed. Eventually, she was zeicha to her son. The Mefarshim point out, why was she zeicha to her son then? Because she came to the point where she realized there was no help. Tell her she thought her and Elkanah were on the same page, they were davening together, and eventually, one of them would be answered. But when Elkanah said to her, am I not like seven sons? I'm worth so much to you. Relax, calm down, appreciate what you've got. She realized Elkanah had given up hope. Elkanah was not davening anymore. Elkanah reached a point where he said, that's it, it's over. Hannah then realized it was all up to her. It was only dependent on her tefillahs. That's when she put it into sixth gear, and that's when she really davened hard, and that's when she realized, Ezri me Hashem. Why? Because she's come to a point where I know Ezri. There was nothing else. She always relied at the back of her mind on her husband's chusim, husband's tefillah. When her husband gave up hope, then she realized, Ein adav atol el abi, it's all my tefillahs. When a person davens like that, he reaches the true madriga of real tefillah. And when a person reaches that madriga of real tefillah, there's much more connection to Ribbono Shel Olam, which is ultimately the purpose of tefillah. The purpose of tefillah is not to have the Yeshua. The purpose is the connection. And through that connection, she was zoicha eventually to a child. But she had come to the point where she realized there was nothing else besides for her tefillahs that could do it. The famous story, we'll know with Reb Shimshon Pinkus, when the person wanted a child, and he drove him out to the forest, and he told him, go down in the forest. Different variations of the story. But the point of the story is that he said, come and go to the forest where there's nothing there, there's no one there, there's just you and the Ribbono Shel Olam. In shul, there's distractions, you look around, you think of other things, you come to a bare, barren forest, you realize there's nothing in the world besides the Ribbono Shel Olam, and you daven like that, then you're zoicha to your real Yeshua. There's a famous story we all know from Shlomo Kalibach, of Schwarzewolf, when the person wanted a Yeshua, and he went to the Kosher Zemagid, the story goes, and he asked him for a bracha for children, and he told him there's no hope, there's no chance of you getting a Yeshua. And he told him there's one person called Schwarzewolf, you go out there to his house on Shabbos to get a bracha from him, and he went there, and he didn't treat him with respect, he stuck him in the barn, he didn't answer him, and the person was sitting there crying the whole Shabbos. And eventually he saw it was getting late, and it was getting almost nacht, it was almost the end of Shabbos, and he knew his Yeshua depended on a bracha on Shabbos, and it wasn't happening. And he realized there's nothing left for him to do, and he cried to Ribbono Shel Olam, and at that point, the story goes that he came out to him, and he invited him to his house, and he gave him a bracha, because at that point, he realized that really every Yeshua comes from Hashem. It's not from the brachas, it's not from the skulas, it's not from all the different things we do, whether it comes to grave hopping or red strings, it's all come from Ribbono Shel Olam, and true tefillah is gaining that realization. There's the famous story as well, which Baruch Levine made into a song, whether it's true or not, I don't know, but it's a great story anyway, by the false Shafoni Rebbe. The person became the Rebbe, and he wanted to make an income, there was no money, so he decided to become a Rebbe, and he came to town, and everyone came to him for brachas and gave him money, and it all went great, till the day came where a woman walked in with tears in her eyes and said to him, my child's dying, I need a bracha. And he realized, oh no, the cover's blown, what am I going to do now? She's relying on me, I'm the fake Rebbe. And eventually he realized, as we said, Eina davatol elabi, turned to the Ribbono Shel Olam, said to the Ribbono Shel Olam, she has full faith in me. What am I to do? It's only between me and you. And he realized there's nothing and no one that could help him besides the Ribbono Shel Olam. He was stuck in a rut now. This woman completely believed in him. And he didn't even believe in himself. And he turned to the Ribbono Shel Olam and said, Ribbono Shel Olam, please help this woman have Yeshua. And the story goes, as you can hear on the song, eventually the child got better. He appreciated that all was dependent on him. And he had, the only chance he had was to down to the Ribbono Shel Olam. He had nothing he can do. If a person realizes every time that you're the fake Rebbe, there's nothing you can do. You think you can do things, but you come to realization you can't do things, then it's true tefillah. It's geared in the right direction. And you talk to the Ribbono Shel Olam, you realize what you can do. Bearing that in mind, there's many parts of tefillah which sometimes get swept into the carpet. We have a few, 2-3 minutes. Just go through a few points. There's an interesting Eli Rabba song showed me on Shabbos. The Eli Rabba says, Simon Menvav, Matzosi. And the Rebbe writes, I found the kol mi shemechaven be'ez hascholas adayin oilam. Meaning of davening, so you've got the stuff which is just there like the coffee, it's just to wake you up. It's not really part of davening, it's just that eventually when you get to Shemeshu, you'll be fully awake. So you've got Zimra, Karbonas, Brachas, but we just sometimes not, obviously, present company excluded, but some people mumble away through that because he's still half asleep. He says, adayin oilam, which sometimes not even said. Kol mi shemachavan ve'ezas cholat adayin ha'ilam, kol Rabbi Huda ha'chosid. Rabbi Huda ha'chosid, Rabbi Haigon, Rabbi Shirigon, these are one of the earliest Rishonim, the end of the Goyinim. Orev ani, I'm a guarantor, the dover, she tfilos in nishmas, on the mechavan probably, ba'adayin ha'ilam, his tfilah will get answered, ve'ein sotim mekadrik al tfilosay. The Sultan has no right to make a on his tefillah. Ve'ilu Sultan u'pegaro Rosh Hashanah v'kipurim tefillosam Rosh Hashanah v'kipurim his tefillah. Nothing can happen. Nothing can interrupt. Va'oyvav no flame. Your enemies will fall away. The fun of liyishim rafi tzara mashal v'im liyishara disappears through the koyach v'adoy ne'ilam. Now adoy ne'ilam is a good example of something that sometimes not everyone has time for. You come to davening, normally those few pages you just move along to brachas. But really you see how much lies within what we would think a simple tefillah of adoy ne'ilam. It's not a chiv, it's not really a bracha, it's not a bracha at all actually. Yet there's so much in every tefillah. And sometimes these part of davenings get confused, get ignored. Aleinu Shabbach, we once spoke about here, the gallus of Aleinu Shabbach, sometimes people treat it as tefillah sederach as they're going out of shul. But really Aleinu Shabbach, proclaiming the Rebbein Shem is one, understanding he's the only one that could do anything. There's Tachanun, our old arch enemy, we try and do away with as often as we can. The Gemara tells us how Rabbi Zafir's wife, understood that Tachanun is the only guarantee that Tefillah will go up to Rebbein Shalom. It's like the engine to the rocket. So much so that when she thought her brother-in-law was in trouble from her husband, she didn't want her husband's Tefillah to be answered. She made him every day not say Tachanun. She told him, yeah, there's a Yahrzeit today, there's a Siyam today, there's a Bris today, there's a Chosin today, as long as he didn't say Tachanun. And the Gemara says, ultimately, one day she was busy and he said Tachanun, and in the end his Tefillah was accepted, and her brother Tachanun was Nifta because he had Kpedes on him. But you see the power of Tachanun, how the Tefillah is basically guaranteed with Tachanun. Without Tachanun, it's not. And Tachanun is one of those tefillahs as well that people sometimes feel it's not always something they have time for, but really, Tachanun is such a powerful tefillah. Sometimes you have someone who says, yeah, no Tachanun today, and I sometimes struggle to get my head around how you can come along and Pasha steal Tachanun from an entire tzibur, something that's based on misconception. I was here once and someone said, Tachanun, no Tachanun. So after I said, why is there no Tachanun? So he says, Yahrzeit. I said, who's Yahrzeit? He goes, come on, it must be someone's Yahrzeit. With that, he stole Tachanun from an entire tzibur. It seems like such a shame that Achrayas, such a person has, by stopping the people that their tefillah could be guaranteed. Who knows what was in their tefillah, which now fell lame due to the lack of Tachanun, as the Gemara tells us. Without Tachanun, it's not guaranteed. And therefore, it comes to these things, Adon Olam, Alein Shabeach, Tachanun. These tefillahs sometimes have so much power in them, we fail to fully recognize what is held within these tefillahs, and we understand that Be'ayin of Ezri, Ezri be Hashem, and put our power into these tefillahs, Mishem with Bezoicha, Rebbein Shem should give us everything we want, to be Malakom Mishayas Libcha L'Teva.